You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Will be like to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. That is the plan, right? And I am here to help you do that. And it is really good to be back here in the studio after 2 weeks away. I had a wonderful trip in Seattle. I even conquered my fear of heights by going up the Space Needle. And here is my recommendation for anyone who has a fear of heights. Do not go up the Space Needle. You don't need to do it. You do not need to go up an elevator 60 floors up, get out on a platform where half of it is a moving glass floor where you can look down from a height of 60 floors. Oh, no, it was not fun. You are afraid of heights. Sorry, Space Needle. Don't go up the Space Needle. Look at a postcard instead. But no, Seattle was really, really, really great. So if you would like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. So I got a message on Facebook from Jerry with an I from Sacramento, and she says, I can't trust myself when it comes to food. I don't know what's right, what's wrong, how much to eat, how little to eat. Is fasting okay or is it bad? I hear different things. Help. So this is a timely question, Jerry, because today I was already planning to talk about, I was already planning to talk about how to trust your food choices. So here's what I hear a lot. People say, I don't trust if I'm really hungry for food or if it's emotional hunger. It's hard to know the difference. Intuitive eating, what in the world is that? Or I'm afraid to give myself permission to eat whatever I want because if I do, I will start eating pizza and ice cream and I won't stop ever. Seriously, I will never stop. So the idea that you can trust yourself to know what your body needs or that you can trust yourself to stop eating those forbidden foods once you started may seem as likely as jetpacking to the moon an hour from now. In other words, totally unlikely. But as someone else recently put it, that might be true for normal people. Normal people might be able to have one of whatever and stop. But my body will tell me I need donuts. So how do you learn to trust yourself when it comes to eating, when it comes to food? So first of all, learn to discern the difference between physical and emotional hunger. So here are some signs that you're physically hungry. A growling, gurgling stomach. Feeling lightheaded and dizzy. Getting a headache, especially if you haven't eaten for some hours. And getting hangry. Oh, who hasn't been hangry? Angry and hungry. Signs that you're emotionally hungry are a specific food sounds good or looks good. You want to reward yourself. You want to calm down. You want to feel better. Those are the difference. So physical hunger is physical. You actually feel it in your body. Emotional hunger is about wanting to resolve some internal problems, some feelings, wanting to feel better. It's wanting to feel better, comfort yourself, distract yourself, numb yourself, reward yourself. If it's physical, you're hungry. If it's an emotional, that's emotional hunger. The next thing to do is identify the triggers. So if you are upset, angry, sad, express that in words, not food. If you're lonely, call a friend. Be a friend to yourself also. When you're alone with a critical part of yourself, it is lonely indeed. When you're alone with a part of yourself that's like, I don't have any friends, I don't have anyone to call, I don't have a life like Friends on TV or How I Met Your Mother, like, where are my friends? I'm a loser. I'm never going to have that life, or whatever you tell yourself, you're going to feel terrible, and then you're going to use food to get away from your own mean voice. But when you cultivate a part of yourself that can be responsive and kind, you achieve solitude, not lonely. So solitude is being alone with a part of yourself that is generous and supportive and giving and reassuring. Ask yourself if you're anxious. Anxiety can be felt as a physical feeling, not just as an emotion. So when you calm your body by using muscle relaxation exercises or walking or working out or anything physical or yoga or even mindfulness, a relaxed body is the first step to relaxing your mind. So try doing something physical to relax your body, and often your mind will follow. Are you bored? Is the trigger boredom? Well, the answer to boredom is this. Do something. Do something. And ask yourself if you are bored, because if you're bored, the solution to boredom is you do something and then you're no longer bored. But sometimes we think we're bored when we're really lonely or when we're really empty. Empty, feeling, you know, disengaged from the world, from other people, blah, depressed. Are you exhausted or sleepy? This is often a trigger because many people use food to perk themselves up when they're tired. And if that's, it's not quite emotional hunger, but it's not meeting a physical need for food. It's the wrong response to exhaustion. When you're tired, you need to rest. Food will not perk you up for long, and sometimes it has the reverse effect, because you have something often with sugar, so you get perky, and then you have that sugar crash and you feel worse than you did before. So if you are exhausted or sleepy and you're using food to wake up, you need rest, not food. Also, put off eating for 3 minutes and see what happens. If you're physically hungry, you're going to get a little bit hungrier. But not so hungry that you're going to lose control. Like if you try to put it off for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour, 30 minutes, no. That way you're going to set yourself up to a binge. Because, by the way, there are two reasons why people binge. One is that they get so hungry, so ravenous, that they actually cannot stop. They can't get to full because they're starving. And so they eat too much. The other reason why people binge is they are dealing with something psychological. They're trying to resolve something internal. So if you only put off eating for 3 minutes, you're going to get a little hungrier, but not too much. But if you're emotionally hungry and you put off eating for 3 minutes, the urgency may pass and you will feel more reflective. Huh, what's going on with me? Why do I want to eat that? What's bothering me? What's eating at me? And less reactive. So reactive is, oh, I need those donuts or chips or whatever. Reflective is, why do I want to eat whatever it is you want to eat? So I challenge you to implement at least one of those strategies today. So whether you, too many papers here, not enough of a mouse. Okay. So when you know whether you are hungry for food or whether you are trying to resolve an internal conflict or state, it is easier to make healthy choices. And that is how you make peace with food for good. And Jerry, when you eat to satisfy physical hunger and you pay attention to whether you're full or not, you're going to know what to eat. Because when you listen to your body, intuitive eating is really about being able to intuit what your body needs. And when you get used to doing it, you can know, like, okay, my body really needs fish, or my body needs pasta. And you could tell the difference. And then when you give yourself the permission to have what you really want, what your body really wants, you're gonna stop when you're full, and you're not going to keep going, because you're not going to have the anticipation of deprivation or the experience of deprivation. So implement at least one of these strategies that I talked about today, discerning the difference between physical and emotional hunger, identifying the underlying triggers. Are you upset, sad, or angry? Are you lonely? Are you anxious? Are you exhausted? And put off eating for 3 minutes and see what happens. And let me know how it goes. Shoot me a message on Facebook or send me an email. So that is how to trust your food choices. The second thing I want to talk about today is how to boost your self-esteem. And again, I want to invite anyone who wants to call in. Now is the time. 818-602-4929 is the number. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, what is eating at you. Because the problem is not food. The problem is not what you're eating. It's why. Okay. How to boost your self-esteem. Self-esteem is the opinion you have of yourself, the respect you hold for yourself, and your overall sense of worth. And there are three ways that you can improve your self-esteem. One is to, and by the way, let me explain why self-esteem is so important when it comes to food. Because when you can truly be with yourself, when you can reassure yourself, like yourself, value yourself, you're not going to abandon yourself by eating. Because turning to food is an abandonment of yourself. That's what it is. It's a way of coping with something, a coping strategy that also backfires. It's a friend. It does something for you, helps you cope. But it is an enemy because it also hurts you. It is a frenemy. But when you have a better sense of self-esteem and wanting to take care of yourself and liking yourself and loving yourself, you're going to treat yourself differently. And when you do that, when you can be with yourself because you like yourself, guess what? You are not going to abandon yourself with food. So that's why it is so important to have the healthiest sense of self-esteem possible. So three ways to improve your self-esteem. One is to accept the full range of your emotions. Recently, a new patient told me, she said she was really oversensitive and dramatic. She was warning me, you know, I'm really oversensitive and dramatic. Just want you to know, be prepared. And she truly believed this to be the case. And I hear things like this all the time. In fact, almost everyone who walks in my office tells me that they were told growing up that they were really, really sensitive and over-emotional. And I myself experienced this. Yes, I was called, you know, Sarah Bernhardt or Sarah Heartburn. Sarah Bernhardt was a very dramatic actress. In like 1892, I don't know how my parents knew who Sarah Bernhardt was, but they would call me Sarah Bernhardt. You're so dramatic. When you're told that you're so dramatic, you think you're too much. When you think you're too much, you think you feel too much. You think you are too much. Sometimes that becomes, oh, you physically are too much. Well, I am here to tell you, you are not too much. Those types of comments attack the emotional feeling self that is part of all of us. Because the underlying message is, ooh, you're too much for anyone to handle. And people think, oh, my feelings are too much. My feelings are a burden to others. And again, we live in a society that turns normal human reactions into something negative, into something bad. We're urged to be strong and not give in to our emotions. Be strong. Don't feel anything. Don't be weak and feel something. Which, you know, I really think that's backwards, because doesn't it take a lot of strength to feel and survive something painful? Yes, it does. So our society has it backwards. It takes strength to feel your feelings. It is weak to go, oh, I'm not going to feel that. No. That's weak. Okay, so we're going to create a new paradigm where feelings are normalized. And again, as you've heard me talk about before, we have as a culture this very negative reaction to feelings. If you're sad, oh, you're depressed. Take an antidepressant. Take a pill. If you're anxious, there is a pill for that too. If you're angry, you should take a pill. Take a chill pill and go to an anger management class. And sometimes huge feelings become actually feeling huge. Consider how intense issues are said to be weighty or heavy. Think about our language. What's the message that our language, our vernacular, and our culture is sending us? So if your self-esteem is based on being strong and not expressing your feelings, challenge the notion that strength equals a lack of emotions or pushing your emotions aside. Because guess what? You still have those feelings. And if you're not feeling them, you're going to be trying to stuff them down with food or numb them out with food. So feel your feelings. By the way, that's the best way to get rid of them. Another way to boost your self-esteem is to accept that perfection is unattainable. Sorry, there is no perfect. A lot of times people say things like, I've heard this more times than I can even imagine. Ugh, I can't stand my gross, squishy stomach. I am so disgusting. Or, you know, oh, my thighs are hideous and I'm thunder thigh. People say the worst things about their bodies. So if your self-esteem is based on your body self, the underlying message is I have to be perfect to be lovable. I have to have the perfect body to be good enough. I have friends who will not date until their bodies are more perfect, which is sad. Or people who really think that they are not lovable. Are you listening, frequent caller Nicole? This is for you. The idea that somehow they're not good enough until they are perfect. And so, you know, the message is, I've got to be perfect to be lovable. And when you objectify yourself, your primary relationship is often to your own body instead of to people. So if you're waiting to be perfect before you consider a romantic relationship, before you change jobs, go back to school, leave your marriage, whatever it is that you want to do and you think you've got to have a different body before you do it, you're defining perfection by a number on the scale. And often that definition of perfection changes as you near your goal weight. The finish line moves farther and farther out of reach, along with your willingness to take risks. Because on some level, you know that no matter what your weight is, there you are. You're still you. You're not actually a different person if you're a smaller person. So when you accept imperfection, it is easier to start now. It is easier to take those risks. It is easier to have fun. And when you're having fun, by the way, when you're out there doing things instead of staying home and waiting to be the perfect size, when you accept imperfection and go out and live your life and you have fun, you're going to have fun instead of using food for fun. So think about that. The third way to increase your self-esteem is to trust the positive views that other people have of you. Self-esteem has a direct impact on the quality of your relationships. If you feel good about yourself, you're going to trust that others also have a positive view of you. But conversely, if you judge yourself, if you criticize yourself, if you're mean to yourself, it's easier to believe that others are judging you or criticizing you. And when you're overly self-critical, you're susceptible to accepting criticism from other people and even staying in unhealthy relationships. Because when you're critical to yourself and someone else is critical to you, you're going to think, wow, that person really knows me well. But when you are not self-critical, when you have a healthy sense of self-esteem and someone is critical to you, you're going to be like, hey, critical person, I don't need you in my life. Go away. It's going to be like that. And then you're going to feel better. And when you feel better, you don't need food to feel better. So when other people like you, when they accept you, when they admire, respect, and cherish you, believe them. Believe them. See yourself through their eyes. That means giving up an idealized view of perfection in terms of your appearance, your internal emotions, your conflicts, your achievements. Giving yourself and the people you love the right to be perfectly imperfect will improve the closeness and quality of your relationships and of your relationship to yourself. So self-esteem is crucial, and self-acceptance, which refers to balancing different parts of yourself, holding the features you like about yourself, recognizing them, seeing them, valuing them, along with the things that you'd like to change. Often we say, yeah, all those things are good about me, but this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, this is not good enough. And that's all we see. We don't see a more balanced view. And think about the way that we see our friends. Most of us don't see our friends and go, yeah, they have those qualities, but this is bad, this is bad, and this is bad. Actually, it's the reverse. Often we say, you know what? Our friends have stuff. They've got these things. I wish we're a little different, but they've got these great qualities, and that's why I like them, and that's why I love them. So how about seeing yourself the same way? So I also challenge you to pick one of these three tips and write about it, journal about it, do it. No, what are your thoughts? What are the obstacles that are stopping you from trusting these ideas that I've laid out today? Think about one thing that you can do differently to make a change, because shifting your mindset is a powerful tool to changing your relationship to food. So start now. There's no time like the present. Okay. Now, here's another. Back to food, because this also has to do with trust. How to feel in control of food. Some common things that I hear on a regular basis. People say, I was totally out of control with ice cream last night. I didn't eat anything all day, and I was completely in control and so proud of myself. I hate getting mad because when I'm mad, I feel so out of control. So if you're struggling with food, it can feel as if the very thing you are trying to control, food, weight, etc., is actually controlling you. And often, controlling food is a response to feelings of powerlessness in other areas of our lives. It is easier to focus on your intake of food or your weight than to deal with an unpredictable boss or teacher or significant other or friend or situation. It is easier to focus on something that you can control in a perfect world, what you are eating, than to think about, your freezer sprung a leak, and this happened to me actually over the weekend, and every 7 minutes you are having to bail out bowls of water from your freezer while you're waiting for the emergency appliance repairman to come, and why did it happen in the first place? I can't do anything about it. I mean, that's kind of a funny example, but often it's easier for us to say, ugh, I hate myself for what I'm eating or not eating, then, ugh, I hate that I can't make my boss into a different person. I can't change my husband, my wife, my girlfriend, my boyfriend, my whoever, my kids. I can't control them. So the focus becomes about controlling what you're eating, controlling your weight. The wish to manage a person or a situation can morph into a wish to control what you're eating. You can't control a person. You can't control a situation, but you can ostensibly control yourself. And that is turning a relational conflict between you and someone else or you and a situation into an internal conflict between you and food. So control is also a way of protecting yourself from feelings of vulnerability. Being vulnerable, which sometimes I call the V word, being vulnerable, is often experienced as being unprotected from potential or probable emotional pain. It doesn't feel good to be vulnerable if you don't trust that, if you have no trust that you're going to get a hug or you're going to get understood. It feels horrible to be vulnerable if there's nothing you can do or you're not going to get understood. So taking control feels active, and it is a solution to the passivity of vulnerability. So conflicts with food can symbolize conflicts about wanting or needing more in your life also. So controlling your portions can be a way of denying needs or wants for more. So these are all ways in which lack of control in our world is displaced onto lack of control onto food, or lack of control in, like, when we have needs and wants, we want other people to meet them. We can't control that. And so, again, it becomes, I can't control the world. I can control my world. I can control food. I'm going to focus on that. Oh. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Dr. Nina. How are you?
I am fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I was just listening to the show about control and everything, and I was trying to think if I can relate to that, and I'm sure I can relate to it. But I want to ask my question. It's probably not the real question, because I know there's always something deeper, and then you're, like, really good at finding out what I'm really asking. but I was, like, doing this when I wake up in the mornings. Usually for breakfast, I'll do, like, yogurt and fruit, or just fruit. And, like, recently, well, I'm going to use the word control. I was thinking maybe I should control my sugar intake. So I'm, like, instead of fruit, when I first wake up, which will, like, you know, what does it do? It's, like, your insulin, it triggers your insulin. So you start, like, makes you hungry, right? Like, triggers, like, hunger doesn't really satisfy you, I think.
That's why I was like, okay, you're having yogurt. Because the protein, what? That's why you're having yogurt, because the protein in yogurt, you know, balances that out. But you are correct. I am going to ask you for the question under the question.
Okay.
So what is your fear of being hungry?
What is my fear of being hungry? What is my fear of being hungry? I'm not fearful of being hungry.
What's going to happen if you eat it? Why do you want to control your sugar intake?
I was thinking if instead of in the mornings I have, like, sugar, if I do fat or if I do eggs, like this morning I woke up and I made two eggs. I'm like, if I do eggs, that's low carb, high protein. Or if I just do, like, a piece of cheese, like a piece of brie cheese and a piece of goat cheese, that's high fat, you know, moderate protein, very low carb, then let's see what happens. Like, let's test
what do you,
it out.
What do you want to happen? And then what?
Yeah, I guess you're right. It's, like, related to the same, like, obsessed with losing the last few pounds type thing. Like, why am I fixating so much on this? Why do I want to be so perfect? What is perfect?
And what is perfect?
Good question. I think perfect is, like, what you see on Instagram that's, like, not even real.
Exactly. So, and think about all those perfect Instagram influencers and models who are actually not leading perfect lives. Do they have perfect lives? No, they take great pictures, which are enhanced often. But for you, if we go back to you, being perfect, I got to go. For those of you who are new to the show, Nicole's a regular caller, and one of the things that we have determined is that when you were a kid, Nicole, you felt like you weren't good enough for your mom because you were, I think you called it a chubster.
A chubs. I was a chubster.
You were a chubster. And you felt as if you weren't as loved or as lovable as you would be if you were thinner like your sister. And your mother would say things in Farsi, like when she ate something that she should better. I don't remember the exact Farsi phrase, but it was basically I should be in the dirt.
In my head.
I should be in the ground. Yeah. I should be dead. I ate that. This is such a terrible crime that I should be dead. So you got a lot of messages that some overt messages, like you shouldn't eat that. Yeah. That's like almost sinful. And you got some covert messages, like you'd be better, not that she ever said that to you, but the message was somehow you'd be more lovable if you were at a thinner weight. And so I think that notion has persisted with you, that it's an unconscious, now conscious idea that if you are thin, or if you are at some random perfect weight that doesn't exist because you never feel perfect, you're going to be lovable and acceptable. Only it doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that really resonates. That really does hit home. I think you're absolutely right. And I mean, like, by you saying it, like, it makes it real. Like, these are things that maybe I subconsciously know, but like, you saying it, like, really does make it real, you know? And I think about my life, and I feel like maybe even like with dating and relationships, like, I just maybe like subconsciously, I just don't feel good enough, you know? And I'm like, okay, well, maybe if I lose 2 pounds, then I'll be more lovable, or then, but you know, like,
and
I don't even want to say everything.
And
right,
so we, yes, because it's an illusion, it's a fantasy, and your good enoughness doesn't come from the number on the scale. I think last time we talked, you were dating someone that on paper sounded really good, and it was someone that your parents, your mom would be very happy with, and you know, on paper he was great, but your experience of him was maybe you were questioning it.
Yeah.
So would he be any more likable if he had like an 8-pack?
No.
Oh.
I know.
So
I know.
So who he is actually is making the difference, you know, between whether you like him or don't like him, not his physical appearance.
Has nothing to do if he's like 2 or 3 pounds heavier or has a 6-pack and doesn't. And that I always try to remember that. I always go back to that because that really hits home too. You know, it's like if I don't feel like I would like him less or more if he was, you know, had a 6-pack or doesn't have a 6-pack, then why do I think that guys may like me more or less, or anybody may like me more or less because of, you know, 2 pounds up or down? You know, it's more about my actions, who I am as a person.
Well, I think
personality.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think that somewhere in you, you feel like that little chub is still there. And that as long as you keep to a certain weight, no one is going to see that chubby girl who you felt was not good enough. And I think you have to get more comfortable with that little girl. And she was perfectly lovable. Perfectly lovable. Yeah, why?
Even as a chub?
Even as a chub. Yeah. Well, not even as a chub. Even that language. No. You were a lovable child. And it has nothing to do, your weight did not make you less lovable.
Yeah.
And if someone discerns the presence of that little girl in you, they're not going to run with horror, and you can't starve her out of you. You can't get rid
of
her.
I can't starve her out of me.
You can't starve her out of you. You don't.
Yeah, I think last week I was, 2 weeks ago, I was also telling you about how I was like scared to eat, or like I felt bad for eating, remember?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's kind of related too, but I didn't mean to cut you off because everything you have to say is really golden, so I want to hear what you have to say. Sorry for cutting you off.
Oh, no, I'd rather hear from you than from me.
No, I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, what you must do is have a different relationship to your younger self than you, instead of viewing yourself through your perception of your mother's eyes.
Okay.
Now, we can understand as adults that your mom has her own food issues, which, as you, I think you said, came from her mom. So your mom had her own food issues, which is why she is so fixated on weight and food. And so when she would say things to you, your interpretation was that you're not good enough.
And
you are still looking at yourself through your view of her eyes, if that makes sense. You're still looking at her through that lens.
Her eyes. Yeah, got it.
And how about looking at her through through like my eyes. Like I didn't know you when you were a kid, and I don't, you know, but I can fully imagine that you were like a sweet kid. Or not even, you don't have to be
I
sweet.
was so sweet.
I'm sure you were. And
I was.
imagine going back in time and seeing yourself through my eyes or someone else's eyes. And I don't think you'd be like,
Okay.
"Oh, that kid is sweet, but she needs to lose a few pounds." You'd be like, "Oh, she's so
Yeah.
cute. She's so sweet. What a nice girl."
I wish I could share a photo of me when I was a chubster or like that cute little kid. I want everyone to see. I
Well,
wish. It would be funny. Anyways, I don't know if
I
you're
invite
still
you to
with
email it to me, and I will post it and say this is invite some positive questions on Facebook or something. Yes, you
Okay.
got to
That
look at yourself
is cool.
only if you want to. You got to look at, and everyone listening, right? Look at yourself as you as a kid who is likable and lovable and innocent and sweet and good. And not try to hide yourself like you're shame, like there's something shameful about you. You're trying to starve the chub out of you, and you can't because she's there. She's you.
So I need to see myself in another light and not as the chub. Is that what you're saying?
That is what I am saying. And so
Okay.
integrate that chub into you so that it's not like, oh, this shameful chubby child that I was. You know, never look at any childhood pictures of me. Instead,
Why?
no, like that's what, instead of, oh, I was a chubby child, don't look, you know.
Oh yeah, I rip up pictures of myself from when I was a kid.
Okay,
I didn't tell
see?
you that
It's
part.
like I'm psychic. You are not the
No, I
first
told
person who's
you.
done that. Yes.
I'm like, I ask a question and then you know the real question.
So it's that shame. So what I'm basically saying is, instead of trying to get rid of this shame from this little kid that you were, and still you're the same person that you were, instead of trying
Yeah.
to get rid of the shame by losing weight, gotta get rid of the shame by challenging there was anything shameful or wrong in the first place.
Absolutely. That makes sense. That makes sense. I could do that. I could try to do that. Yeah, it's not shameful to be a little bit overweight. So what?
As a
So
ch
what?
yes, as a child or an adult.
Yeah. But to be honest, deep down inside, I do feel like it's shameful to be fat as an adult because I think it's a reflection of like who you are as a person and your habits. And
No.
like, I need,
No.
no? Okay.
No.
Yeah, I need you to combat me. Yeah, I'm just talking.
Yeah, it's these are learned ideas, learned from your mom and learned from our culture. You know, there are many
Yeah.
reasons why, by the way, why people are overweight. And by the way, what is overweight? Like if Marilyn Monroe were to come as she was in the 50s or 60s at the height of her fame and considered the sexiest woman alive, if she were to come into
Yeah.
our culture today, guess what? She'd be considered plus size. What the hell?
Yeah.
So what is
I know.
overweight?
I would actually call her, I would say she's plump or she's voluptuous and plump.
Yes.
She's
So what?
full. Yeah,
So
we in Farsi
what's?
we say to pour, which means she's full. She's full.
She's full. So, but so you know, 50, 60 years ago, overweight was there was a different definition than what we have today. So well, so
Yeah.
but anyway, so that's also a question of like what is overweight? Like what is normal? And some people are just genetically higher on the scale. Some people eat too much, not because they lose control or don't know or have no willpower, but because they don't have access to healthy foods, or they make poor food choices, or they don't know about nutrition, or they don't. There are many reasons why
Yeah.
people eat the wrong things and then are at a higher weight.
Yeah.
Some people do have a binge eating disorder, which is not a reflection of who they are as a person. It is a reflection. And by the way, you can have binge eating disorder and be of any weight. You can be underweight, even normal weight, or overweight. Binge eating disorder, you cannot see it on a person. And that, but if they are overweight, it is not because they lack willpower. It's because they have a strategy to help themselves that is hurting them. And isn't it interesting that when, you know, if someone is like, say, using heroin to cope, no one is like, oh, what a disgusting person. Ugh. It's, oh, that person has a problem. Let's get them to rehab. Let's get them some help. So your weight is not a reflection of who you are as a person. Yeah. The reflection of who you are as a person is the life you lead and how you are and your values and your morality and how you lead your life and how you are to other people. That reflects who you are as a person.
Absolutely. That makes complete sense. That really does make sense. No, you're right. I need to change that in my head.
So I'm going to challenge you to think about who you are as a person so that you have something that you can, and who you were as a kid, as a person, so that it stops being reduced, if you pardon the expression, to a number on the scale. A scale cannot measure your value.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to report next week. This is my homework.
Okay, I look forward to the report.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nina. That was really helpful.
One other thing I recommend to you, Nicole, and to anyone out there who can relate to what Nicole is talking about, get that picture of yourself as a kid, one that you haven't torn up, and look at it. Find a way to look at that picture and find the love in your heart for that child instead of just,
Okay. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Talk to you next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, talk to you next week. Bye.
There's always a question under the question. Ain't it the truth? Okay, so I was saying about control, right? Here's some food for thought. If you are focusing on controlling food, and you are really, really, that is your focus, and that is what your where your mind goes, somewhat like Nicole. I want you to think about what, if you weren't thinking about controlling what you're eating, what would be on your mind? What would you be worried about? What would you be thinking about? What would you be wanting to control or influence if you weren't trying to think about food? If I took all your thoughts of food and weight and body image and blah, blah, blah. If I took all of it away from you with my magic wand, here, I'm going to make my new pen, my cool new Dr. Nina pen. I just got it yesterday. It's so cool. All right, I'm going to turn it into a magic wand. Those of you who are on Instagram and I'm on Facebook Live. You can see my pen. It's really a magic wand. I'm taking all those thoughts away from you. You cannot think about food or weight or body image for the next 5 minutes. What is on your mind? Think about that. Because when you identify and process the underlying emotions and conflicts that lead to binge eating, stress eating, or any kind of emotional eating, you stop using food to cope. That's just how it works. When you identify and then process those conflicts and emotions, when you directly attend to them, food becomes breakfast, lunch, dinner, and some snacks. And that's that. All right, how are we doing on time? All right, I have about 5 more minutes. If anyone else wants to get in a quick call, 818-602-4929. Probably actually wait till next week because we don't have all that much time. I'm gonna start talking about the F word and your weight. The F word. It is not fat. It is not food. And it is not the other F word either. I am talking about the word feelings. Feelings. So as I was saying before, part of what makes us human is our ability to feel emotions. But again, we live in a culture that tells us there's something wrong with our feelings. So it is no wonder that because we get all of these messages about, angry anger management class is called for, sad, a pill is called for, anxious, another pill, scared, another pill, or be strong, fight, don't feel that feeling. Even happy, oh, you might be a little bit too happy, you might be a little hypomanic. It is no wonder that we often have difficulty recognizing that emotions, needs, desires are reactions to being human. They are not a defect. It is not a character defect to have a feeling. You are not an angry person. You are a person who's angry. You are not a sad person, a depressed person. You're a person who is depressed, who's struggling with depression. And so a feeling is a reaction to a situation. It is not a reflection of your character. But when you have trouble identifying and processing those uncomfortable or seemingly intolerable feelings because the mere existence of those feelings is perceived as being weak or bad or somehow wrong, you can turn to food as a way of dealing and suppressing those feelings. So, problem is, food can't take away feelings for long. As counterintuitive as it may sound, the only way to actually get rid of feelings is to feel them, to actually feel them. So, let's just take one. Let's just take one. Anger. When you think of anger, I know most people tell me they think of anger, like at a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, anger is like totally losing it and screaming and yelling and throwing things and all of that. But you know what? Anger is also annoyance, frustration, rage, fury, irritation. Those are all derivatives of anger. So it helps to make a gauge of what you're feeling. So on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put annoyed? Where would you put rage? Where would you put anger? What's a two? Is it frustration? Is it annoyance? Is it irritation? So if you don't recognize and gauge your feelings, every emotion feels like a 10. Everything feels like too much. When you push it all down, the slightest feeling is going to feel like too much. It's going to feel scary. And if your feelings are overwhelming, you are more vulnerable to turning to food for relief. So, check in with yourself. If you have a conflict over anger, check in with yourself about why. Often, women don't like feeling angry because it makes them feel out of control. They got messages that it's not nice to be angry. For men, it's different. It's sadness. Boys don't cry. Be a man. Man up. All of that. But we're talking about anger now for the next minute or so. So think about why it is that you don't like feeling angry. And often, by the way, if you think you don't like being angry, if you think you're okay with anger, but you don't, or you never get angry, that is a sign that you may have a problem with anger. If your go-to is chips, popcorn, nuts, anything with a crunch, if that's what you use, that kind of food that you use to sort of get away from these feelings, then that is often a sign that you are dealing with anger. Crunchy foods, anything with a bite, even if it's carrots and celery, that may be an expression of anger, anger that you can't let yourself recognize or feel. And here's the thing about anger. Often, we deny our anger towards other people. Oh, I'm not mad at that. Oh, that didn't bother me. Oh, it's okay. Oh, my friend took advantage of me. No big deal. She's not perfect. Whatever. Or that person, cut me off on the road. Oh, whatever. And then you go home, you eat the kitchen, and what happens? You get really, 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 really mad at yourself. So if you're constantly getting mad at yourself for what you're eating, wonder, take a moment and wonder, if I can't be mad at myself for what I'm eating, who or what would I be mad at? Who would I be irritated by? Who's annoying me? What's frustrating? Right? And just try not to turn it on yourself and be curious about where that the source of this anger or whatever form of it is, where that really is. And also just practice on a scale of 1 to 10 when you get, again, irritated, annoyed, frustrated. Recognize it. That's anger. Put it on a scale of 10, or a scale of 1 to 5 if that's easier. Okay, that's a 3 out of 5. That's a 3 out of 10. And the more that you do it, the more you can kind of regulate the feeling, because otherwise irritation feels like anger. Annoyance feels like anger. And we want irritation to be like, oh, so irritated, right? Or annoyed, I'm so annoyed. And that way you also won't take it out on yourself, and you won't express it with food. So again, it is not what you're eating that is the problem. It is what is eating at you. So thank you so much for joining me today here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday, almost every Wednesday. If I'm not here, there's a repeat show. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. If you would like to, if you'd like to listen live, listen at 10 a.m. Pacific. If you'd like to listen later, you can find me on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher Radio, or anywhere where you listen to podcasts. And if you like the show, please take a moment and give me a rating. The more ratings that I get, the more people I reach, we reach, because it's a community effort, and the more people we help. So thank you again, and I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.